Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today we'll have some highlights for you from the Democratic National Convention. We'll have some information about Hillary Clinton's vice presidential pick. You'll hear why San Miguel Fire has given the boot to Cal Fire and plans to go back to being an independent district. We'll have news about a grocery boycott and which stores are targeted. You can learn how to run for the new trustee district seats in the Grossmont Union High School District, since the filing period is now open. And we'll have information for you on two important meetings coming up in La Mesa and El Cajon, one on community choice energy as an alternative to SDG&E, and the other on redistricting plans to create district elections in El Cajon. We'll have information for you on a major local philanthropist who has passed away. On sports, hear about the latest Padres trade. And then on Destination East County, we'll tell you about all the most exciting upcoming events this weekend, from Pine Valley Days to our very own Roaring Twenties party to benefit East County Magazine. We'll have an update for you on the air tanker situation for wildfires and on drones that interfered with the sand fire. And then we'll be replaying some classics for you, including a bookshelf interview with Antonio Villano, an interview with Don Axe, an expert on small space urban farming, and wrapping up today's show, Liz Alper will bring you the latest on Aztec sports. We'll have all these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Last week's Republican National Convention opened with victims of crimes committed by undocumented immigrants speaking and sparking fear. By contrast, the Democratic National Convention this week highlighted stories of triumph and hope, touting strength through unity instead of divisive politics. Democratic delegates made history by shattering the glass ceiling as they nominated Hillary Clinton to be the first woman heading up a major party ticket for the presidency. Reverend Leah Daughtry, Democratic National Convention CEO, welcomed the delegates to Philadelphia, stating, "Democrats have a mission, a mandate, and a responsibility to reach the least, the last, the lost, the locked in, and the left behind. Our diversity is not our problem," she said. "It is our promise." Speaker after speaker touted strength through unity, rejecting the politics of division touted by Republican nominee Donald Trump. Congressional member Linda Sanchez nominated Hillary Clinton for the office of President of the United States. Sanchez told a tear-wrenching story about a children's football team chanting to Latino children, "Build that fence," showing how hurtful the policies of divisiveness can be. New Hampshire Senator Gene Shaheen called for an end to the era of mass incarceration, adding, "We need a president who listens, who learns, who has empathy, and who wants the same opportunities for all children that she's had, who wants an America where we go forward together." Illinois Congressional Member Luis Gutierrez, sprinkling in Spanish, told delegates, "Mejor, más segura, más fuerte. With Hillary Clinton, our nation will be greater, our nation will be stronger, our nation will be safer." Some used the stage to criticize Trump. Pennsylvania Senator Bob Casey said, "Donald Trump doesn't make anything in America but a buck off of working people," and then went down a list of where Trump sources his products overseas. First Lady Michelle Obama gave a powerful speech, stating, "I wake up every morning in a house that was built by slaves, and I watch my daughters, two beautiful, intelligent black young women, playing with their dogs on the White House lawn. And because of Hillary Clinton, my daughters and all our sons and daughters now take for granted that a woman can be President of the United States." Senator Elizabeth Warren, who has called for breaking up banks that are too big to fail, stated, "There is a huge difference between the people fighting for a level playing field and people fighting to keep the system rigged." Senator Bernie Sanders, Clinton's primary rival, has officially endorsed Hillary Clinton. Taking stage at the convention, he stated that despite differing with her on some issues, Hillary Clinton will be an outstanding president, and I am proud to stand with her tonight. Sanders praised Clinton for her willingness to take bold action on climate change and for her work on health care reform, as well as her support of raising the minimum wage, fighting for equality, and willingness to support Supreme Court justices who will support the rights of workers, women, minorities, the LGBT community, and the environment. Speeches included the mother of Trayvon Martin, victim of a police shooting, and former Congresswoman Gabby Gifford, who survived an assassination attempt. Both praised Clinton's efforts to halt gun violence and assure equal treatment of all under the criminal justice system. California Governor Jerry Brown called climate change the existential threat of our time, noting, "Trump says global warming is a hoax. I say Donald Trump is a fraud." Former President Bill Clinton said of his wife, "This woman has never been satisfied with the status quo in anything. She always wants to move the ball forward." The convention was not without controversy, however. At the outset, some Sanders delegates booed Clinton and even Sanders himself when he endorsed his former rival. Numerous Sanders delegates walked out after Clinton won the roll call, dismayed not only by Sanders not receiving the most delegates, but also by revelations in emails published by WikiLeaks that proved the Democratic National Committee actively worked to undermine the Sanders candidacy. Those revelations led to the resignation of Debbie Wasserman Schultz as DNC chair. The Clinton campaign promptly hired on Wasserman Schultz, leaving Sanders supporters angered at what they viewed as Clinton-rewarding actions that violated the DNC rules requiring neutrality. But strong voices called for unity to defeat Trump. Former CIA Director and Defense Secretary Leon Panetta, who has served under 9 administrations, said of Trump, "We cannot afford an erratic finger on our nuclear weapons." Retired U.S. Navy Rear Admiral John Hudson slammed Trump for suggesting Russia hack Clinton emails to help Trump win the election. Trump later said he was only joking, but the admiral observed, "That's criminal intent. Donald Trump calls himself the law and order candidate, but he will violate international law." He warned that Trump has endorsed torture and killing families of terrorists, warning he'll order our troops to commit war crimes by killing of civilians. The admiral noted pointedly, "More than 120 Republican national security leaders recently warned that Donald Trump would, in their words, make America less safe." President Barack Obama called Hillary Clinton the most qualified candidate ever to run for the presidency and the most experienced to serve as commander-in-chief. And he praised her for remaining cool and level-headed even in a crisis. Then he urged voters to reject cynicism, reject fear, to summon what's best in us, to elect Hillary Clinton as the next president of the United States, and show the world we still believe in the promise of this great nation. Following a roll call vote in which Clinton officially secured enough votes for the nomination, Vermont voted last, with Senator Sanders moving to suspend procedural rules and, in a spirit of unity, nominate Hillary Clinton by acclamation as the presidential candidate of the Democratic Party. Clinton will give her acceptance speech Friday evening, after our deadline to record this show. But after securing the nomination on Wednesday, Clinton sent this message of inspiration out on her Twitter account. "If there are any little girls out there watching, I may become the first woman president, but one of you might be next." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Democratic presidential frontrunner Hillary Clinton has announced that she has selected Virginia Senator Tim Kaine to be her vice presidential running mate. Clinton cited Kaine's readiness to do the job as what swayed her to choose him. "To know Tim is to love him," she wrote in a fundraising email. Kaine served as governor of Virginia and was elected a U.S. senator in 2012. He was one of the first to support Clinton early in the 2016 campaign, being involved with a pro-Clinton group, Ready for Hillary. Kaine speaks Spanish and has a strong record of supporting civil rights and women's reproductive freedoms. His support for big financial institutions and free trade agreements opposed by labor, however, could be problematic in wooing Sanders supporters. His presence in the Clinton campaign could help with the demographic that has been pulling away from Democrats, white men. He is also likely to help shore up support among women and minorities. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
4 years after contracting out its fire protection services to CAL FIRE, the San Miguel Consolidated Fire Protection District's board has voted to give CAL FIRE the boot and return to being a freestanding district. After a contentious meeting that lasted nearly 5 hours earlier this month, the board voted 4-3 to appoint an ad hoc committee to come up with a plan for ending the partnership with CAL FIRE. Voting for the motion were Board President Teresa McKenna, as well as Directors Jim Eck, Kerry Johnston, and Mike Bassio. Voting against it were Directors William Keel, Dan McMillan, and Dave Rickards. While many residents attending the meeting in a packed, sweltering room at San Miguel's Spring Valley headquarters expressed appreciation and respect for the work of CAL FIRE, most of the speakers, as well as the emails sent in and the directors who spoke out, said it's time for the district to regain local control of its firefighting operations. McKenna said, "The funding is available to go back to standalone. If we do not get out of this contract now, we never will. It's now or never." San Miguel voted unanimously back in 2012 to contract out the fire protection to CAL FIRE with a contract that expires in 2018. Back then, falling revenues from a drop in property taxes during the recession led to a $1.7 million budget gap, forcing cuts in manpower as well as closure of a fire station on Dehesa Road. McKenna, who was elected to the board in 2014 on a platform of returning the district to local control, said the former fire chief steered the board with incorrect data that helped support contracting out to CAL FIRE. She provided the board with a report that showed the district has in fact been losing $100,000 a month, not increasing savings as was promised through its contracted services. But others voiced concerns. Director Keel wanted to see a study done by an independent consultant, not just an in-house study by the district's chief financial officer. He said terminating the contract is not in the district's best interests. Director Ricards, a former firefighter, said the board was rushing an important decision. "I see alarm bells," he said, adding, "I want to make sure if it's done, it should be done right." But others testified that long hours firefighters must work under CAL FIRE's management is causing serious physical and mental health problems for many families. CAL FIRE demands that its firefighters work 72-hour shifts, far more than the 56 hours required when San Miguel was a standalone district. Fire Captain Ron Quinlan stated, "Working three 24-hour shifts in a row is taxing on anyone's mental and physical health, especially with sleep deprivation." Most of the emails received by the district also criticized CAL FIRE for pushing employees to work beyond their physical limits. Firefighter Corey Powell called the schedule extremely unsafe, adding, "I have witnessed my engineer falling asleep at the wheel." Some members of the public warned of hidden liabilities, however, from pensions and other benefits owed to retired employees that the district will take on by axing its deal with CAL FIRE. Critics claimed the new fire board has rushed its decision to end the contract. But the board majority indicated it has publicized its intentions for more than a year and isn't rushing into anything. Director Mike Bassio concluded, if anything was rushed through, it was the CAL FIRE contract. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
On Saturday, firefighting planes had to halt operations for half an hour on the massive deadly sand fire in Santa Clarita to track down a person flying a drone in the fire zone. On Monday, the federal government announced a program to make a dent in the problem. So far this year, drones have interfered with operations on more than 15 other fires. The Department of the Interior is now partnering with private companies to get fire locations mapped out and sent to DJI, the country's biggest drone manufacturer. Christy Wiley with Interior's Office of Wildland Fire explains what happens next.
They put what's called a geofence or a virtual boundary around that fire. And so if you have a drone that goes across that boundary, then they send an alert to their drone operators.
The drone operators will get an immediate email or text alert telling them to back off. Earlier this year, the government put a new system in place where fire managers report drones to the Federal Aviation Administration, which alerts law enforcement officers who track down the violators. By law, all hobby drones must be registered with authorities. Wiley says drones are very dangerous because they can crash into a plane and hurt even more people if either the drone or plane comes hurtling toward the ground.
They're a hazard to the aircraft flying and they're a hazard to the firefighters on the ground. The fire managers do not shoot drones down. They will just discontinue the air operations.
Wiley says this new system is a prototype that will be improved and expanded by the 2017 fire season. By then, the drone manufacturers hope to be able to actually prevent drones from operating in restricted airspace once they reach a geofence perimeter. The system could also be used to protect places with restricted airspace like prisons and nuclear reactors. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A boycott of six Vons, Ralph's, and Albertsons grocery store locations is underway starting this past Monday. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union in San Diego has announced. If no contract agreement is reached by August 8th, the union has voted to call a strike against all the store's locations throughout Southern California. The boycott locations include two in East County, the Vons store on University Avenue in La Mesa, and the Albertsons supermarket on Campo Road in Spring Valley. Other locations include Ralph's stores in Mission Valley and San Marcos, a Vons in Encinitas, and an Albertsons in Chula Vista. Union leader Mickey Kasperian states in a post on the UFCW webpage that the union attended bargaining sessions on July 20th and 21st, fully prepared to bargain a mutually acceptable contract, but he wrote in his message to workers, Albertsons, Vons, and Ralphs did not share this intention, and their proposals continue to fail to recognize your hard work. The company's profitability and the increasing cost of living in Southern California is not acceptable. The issues include wages, pensions, and health care. East County Magazine's news partner, 10 News, reached out to Vons, Albertsons, and Ralphs. Vons and Albertsons spokesman Carlos Illingworth called the boycott an unfortunate distraction that won't impact the outcome of the negotiations. He said the issues are complex, adding, "We are working hard to find a settlement that is fair to our employees, good for our customers, and allows our company to remain competitive." Negotiations will resume on August 1st. Meetings for all union members have been scheduled for August 8th to vote to accept or reject management's offer. Workers have already voted to strike if a deal is not reached. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Chisato Iverson.
This is Tasha Matthews with an education report. For the first time, the Grossmont Union High School District will hold elections in November for individual trustee districts. In the past, trustees were elected at large for the entire district instead of representing specific communities. The candidate filing period opened July 18th and closes August 12th. August 12th is also the deadline for candidates to submit ballot statements, which for the first time will be accepted electronically. There are no filing fees, though modest fees are charged for candidates to publish ballot statements. With smaller districts, the cost for ballot statements is far less than in the past, just $315 in Trustee Area 1 and $360 in District 2. District 1 is an open seat with no incumbent. It includes Lemon Grove, Spring Valley, and La Prensa. District 2 is currently represented by Jim Stieringer. It includes La Mesa, Casa de Oro, and Mount Helix, and a part of Rancho San Diego. The other three trustee districts will not be up for election until 2018. Winning candidates will serve for a four-year term. For guidelines and information, you can visit the websites for the Registrar of Voters and the Grossmont Union High School District.
This is Miriam Raftery with information on two important public meetings coming up in East County this week in La Mesa and El Cajon. La Mesa will hold a public meeting on whether to provide La Mesa residents with an option to buy electrical power through a community choice energy program as an alternative to SDG&E. The meeting will be held on Wednesday, August 3rd at 7 p.m. in the council chambers at La Mesa City Hall. Community choice programs enable cities to buy or generate power for residents and businesses in their communities. Supporters say these programs help consumers save money on utility bills since the ventures are not for profit. Cities can also opt to buy more power from renewable sources, such as solar. Utility companies have opposed community choice programs, claiming these could jeopardize their investments in long-term power generation contracts. The second important meeting this week is an educational workshop in El Cajon on a proposed ballot initiative that would establish district elections for city council races starting in 2018. Currently, council members are elected at large, meaning all voters in the city cast votes. Breaking the city up into five districts would mean the people in each district would elect their own council member. The workshop will be held on Thursday, August 4th at 7 p.m. at the Lexington Elementary School's auditorium. All residents are encouraged to attend and ask questions. Translation services will be available in Spanish and in Arabic. The workshop will educate residents on the ballot measure proposed by the city and on requirements of the California Voting Rights Act, which seeks to assure representation of minorities in communities. More workshops will be held in the coming months.
San Diego has lost one of its greatest philanthropists. Conrad Prebis has died of cancer on July 24th at Scripps Hospital. Prebis donated generously to support major educational institutions, hospitals, arts and youth services organizations across our region. A heart condition as a child in Indiana prevented Prebis from engaging in strenuous physical activities, so he turned instead to music and the arts. After making his fortune in real estate and construction, he became one of San Diego's major philanthropists. The new Conrad Prebis Aztec Student Union at San Diego State University is named for Prebis, as is the Sanford Burnham Prebis Medical Discovery Institute in La Jolla and the Conrad Prebis Music Center at the University of California, San Diego. He supported cardiovascular research at Scripps and was a major benefactor for the East County Boys and Girls Club. San Diego State President Elliot Hirschman called Prebis a great man and a great spirit, adding, "His contagious optimism and selfless generosity have forever changed our campus and the entire San Diego region." Priebus's legacy will live on through scholarships he established, fund biomedical research, and the Student Center, Hirschman said. UCSD Chancellor Pradeep Khosla said Priebus's generosity and kindness has left a lasting impact on our campus, our community, and our world. El Cajon Councilman Gary Kendrick recalled Priebus's efforts to clean up communities in El Cajon, buying rundown rental properties, booting out drug dealers, and cleaning up the sites to make them safe places for families to live. San Diego City Councilman Todd Gloria posted on Twitter, remembering Priebus as a true gentleman and generous benefactor, concluding, many of our civic treasures are better because of him. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Tasha Matthews.
This is Liz Alpin with the Padres Report. As one of the few Padres to fall victim to trade rumors, particularly from teams in the American League East, those rumors finally came true for Melvin Upton Jr. He is now a Toronto Blue Jay. FanRag's John Heyman reports that the Jays will take care of much of Upton Jr.'s remaining $22 million contract. Upton Jr. did well to increase his trade value as a Padre this season, being the hero of two walk-off home runs. His average has dwindled. He's down to 256, but he's still hit 16 home runs and stolen 20 bases. He'll fit right into an all-star Blue Jays lineup that includes reigning American League MVP Josh Donaldson. In return, the Padres are receiving cash and Dominican pitching prospect Hansel Rodriguez. Rodriguez was playing for the Bluefield Blue Jays of the Appalachian League before the trade. Rodriguez is a David Price-type pitcher, going 2-1 so far in 6 games in 2016 with a 3.06 ERA.
You're listening to KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes the Pine Valley Days Festival and Parade, A Sip of Julian, a Musician's Showcase in La Mesa, Helix Waters Customer Appreciation Day at the Water Conservation Garden, and our own Roaring Twenties Party in La Mesa.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including a theatrical production, night fishing at Shanty Lakes, a barbecue and dance, Heart of Mount Helix, the Julian Starfest, and Vieja Summer Nights. So stay tuned for all of these events and more.
Pine Valley Days will take place July 29th and 30th in the mountain town of Pine Valley. A highlight of the two-day festival is a parade along the old Highway 80 through Pine Valley on July 29th, starting at 9 a.m. featuring horses, bagpipes, clowns, cars, dragons, marching bands, and more. Other activities include a craft village at the Pine Valley County Park on Saturday, Friday night deep pit barbecue, and dancing in the park after dark, plus a burrito breakfast on Saturday, and a music festival. For more details, you can visit pinevalleydays.com.
A musician's showcase will be presented at the Visionary Performance Space in La Mesa on July 29th and 30th at 7 p.m. This multi-artist event will include many local performers with musical selections ranging from jazz to pop to musical theater and more. Some musical selections will be accompanied by members of the City Ballet Orchestra. This cabaret-style show provides a vehicle for both new and emerging and seasoned artists to present their musical talents. For more information, check out visionarydancetheater.org.
Julian's Chamber of Commerce hosts the second annual Sip of Julian on Saturday, July 30th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. The Sip features growers and producers offering samples of their handcrafted specialties, including wine, craft beer, hard cider, and mead. Samples will be paired with small food tastings at each venue, where you can also take in the scenery in Julian, a historic gold rush town. Proceeds will benefit Julian's annual Country Christmas and Tree Lighting Celebration. For tickets and information, you can visit juliansca.com and click on Events.
East County Magazine invites you to our own Roaring Twenties Party on Sunday, July 31st from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Sampas Hall Winery Tasting Room in La Mesa. Guests are encouraged to don flapper, gangster, or 20s movie star attire for their festivities. Entertainment includes singers and dancers from Visionary Dance Theater performing Chicago songs from their upcoming All That Jazz production, the vocal trio The Classics, as well as 20s-era film showings and prizes. Get in the spirit of the ragtime and jazz age at our Party of the Century, complete with a catered Italian feast, Al Capone, and the Great Gatsby would have loved, all to benefit our non-profit public media outlet and our wildfire and emergency alerts. You can make reservations at eastcountymagazine.org.
The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College will host a Customer Appreciation Day for Helix Water District customers on Sunday, July 31st from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Activities at the event include guided tours of the garden led by experts on horticulture, native habitats, and water-wise gardening, a children's educational program on butterflies and how to attract them, and refreshments. For more information, visit thegarden.org.
Grossmont College's Stagehouse Theater presents 80 Days, the timeless tale of amazing adventures as Phineas Fogg attempts to circumnavigate the globe in less than 80 days to win a sizable wager. The play is based on the novel Around the World in 80 Days by Jules Verne. The production runs July 28th through August 5th. For tickets and details, visit grossmont.edu/theaterbrochure.
Remember the good times you've enjoyed with your girlfriends over the years? Lamplighters Theater presents the Dixie Swim Club, a story of five friends who've won championship swim meet together in college. They bonded together and meet every year on the Outer Banks off the coast of North Carolina at the same rental beach cottage. Best friends who stay together through life's challenges and heartfelt moments. The play continues now through August 7th. For tickets and details, you can visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
You're invited to drop a line at the last night fishing events of the season at Santee Lakes on Thursday evening, August 4th and August 18th from 5 to 11:30 p.m. A lantern is required and no radios are allowed. Learn more at SanteeLakes.com.
The Julian Starfest is a free public star party in Julian that will take place August 6th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. You can take a star tour of the heavens using the many telescopes set up in the viewing area. Experts will be on hand to answer questions. Parking is available nearby, and it is suggested you bring a red light flashlight to guide yourself to the observing area. If you don't have a red light flashlight, red film will be provided to cover a white light flashlight. Please know white lights in the observing area. Find out more at julianstarfest.com.
Secret Hills Ranch in Alpine is hosting a barbecue, dance, and silent auction on August 6th to help fund medical bills for cancer survivor Vicky Halsey, a horse trainer and advocate for children. The deadline for pre-purchasing dinners is August 1st. There will also be a petting zoo, playground, and jumpy for kids to enjoy. For tickets and information, you can visit secrethillsranch.com or call 619-820-2994.
Tickets are now on sale for the 9th annual Heart of Mount Helix set for Saturday, August 13th, 5:30 to 10 p.m. at the park atop Mount Helix. The party will feature dancing Olympus stars to the mighty Untouchables, sampling from over 15 local restaurants along with wine, local brews, and spirits from several local establishments. You can also experience live art demonstrations, bid on live and silent auction items, and enjoy musical vignettes against the backdrop of some of East County's most inspirational views. For tickets, you can visit mounthelixpark.org. That's mthelixpark.org.
You're invited to spend the weekend under the stars at Viejas Summer Nights at Viejas Resort in Alpine each Saturday and Sunday night, now through September 4th. You can dance the night away under the stars at the park with high-energy bands and DJs on Saturday nights from 7 to 11 p.m. Then view a blockbuster movie in the park on a 30-foot screen Sunday nights at 8 p.m. You can visit viejas.com/content/summer nights for details about movies and bands each weekend all summer long.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. My very special guest today is Don Axe, and Don is the owner of Valley View Urban Farms in Spring Valley, and he's going to be telling us all about urban farming and homesteading, even in a small space, as we work to get back to our agricultural roots here in East County. Don, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Miriam. Nice to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Now, listeners, a lot of you may not know that according to the Farm Bureau here in San Diego County, we have more small family farms under 10 acres than any county in America. That's right, more than Iowa or Kansas or Nebraska or anywhere else. So, Don, just how small is your urban farm?
Well, our urban farm is on a half an acre. And a lot of it is a slope, so we have maybe a quarter of an acre that we do all of our farming on.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was out and visited this, and I was just so impressed with how much you've been able to accomplish in a small space. So let's talk about, you know, some of the things you do there. But first, can you tell us a little bit about your background? How did you get into this?
Well, I was kind of born into it. My grandparents had a 20-acre farm up in Escondido, and they raised cows and horses and planted a lot of vegetables. So I couldn't wait to get up there and spend the summer with my grandparents growing up. And so it's kind of born into me, and I enjoy doing it my whole life, off and on. So I've been able to start this urban farm here in Spring Valley and be able to provide for family with organic products
and some extras to sell, as well as classes that you teach. And we'll be talking more about that in a minute. But first, tell us about the hydroponics. For those who aren't familiar with it, you raise vegetables and fruits both via hydroponics, which is essentially in water, and also soil grown in raised beds. What's involved in getting started in the hydroponics, and why do that? It seems a little bit counterintuitive since we're in a drought. How does that work?
Well, typically a hydroponic system will save about 95% water use over a ground or soil garden. So a lot of evaporation goes on with the soil. But with the hydroponics, it's pretty much a closed system. So we'll start our seedlings and put them in our hydroponic system. And within a month, they're completely grown and ready for harvest.
You were using what they call a floating bed for this?
A floating mat system where it's insulation, a mat of 4x8 floating mat on about 6 or 8 inches of water.
Mm-hmm. And how big is the raised bed?
It's before 4 feet by 8 feet. Mm-hmm. So we can typically grow about 60 heads of lettuce in that area within a month.
Wow, that's amazing.
So very fast. We don't have to worry about weeds or gophers.
Instant salad bar.
Yes.
Okay. Now, in addition to that, you also have vegetables and fruits even growing in raised planter beds and just about everything else. Tell us about where you get your materials to build the beds from.
Sure. When I started this, I didn't have much money because 2008 came and I had a construction-related industry that was not going to be staying alive. So I was looking around to be able to start growing some things for our family and providing a healthy food for us. Mm-hmm. So a great source was a free list on Craigslist. So I would gather products and different things that people were getting rid of and not wanting to use. Also, there were a lot of homes in foreclosure where people were having to get rid of their animals and cages and different things like that. So I kind of gleaned off the land, and everything at the farm is made of repurposed material.
Now, we're recording this in February, listeners. I was out there in January, and you had red ripe strawberries. Eat your heart out, East Coast folks, in the middle of the blizzard while we were out sampling strawberries.
Right. Yeah, that was in a vertical growing system that we had, basically a trash can with slices cut in the side around, and the strawberries would grow out of it.
Yeah, very innovative. Now, speaking of animals, you've also got all kinds of farm animals out there in that small space. Tell us a little bit about what you have.
Well, we have dairy goats, three female dairy goats, Beverly, Katie, and Sadie. We also have chickens that we raise for eggs.
Yeah, all different kinds. How many different types of chickens do you have?
We have about 8 or 10 different breeds, quite a variation of color and color of eggs. We'll get pink and blue and green and brown and white.
So Easter's coming up, listeners. You don't have to dye the eggs. Just get some chickens that lay them in colors. How interesting. You also have ducks and turkeys, I understand.
Ducks, turkeys, rabbits. The rabbits that we raise are Flemish Giant rabbits.
Adorable. How big is the Flemish Giant?
One of them is about 20 pounds. The world record right now for a Flemish Giant is 55 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's quite the rabbit.
You sell those for pets if people want?
They make incredible pets. They're very docile. They get very large. And a friend of ours has one of them that we sold to them. And the rabbit sleeps with a girl at night in the bed.
And gorgeous. And they don't bark? And they don't scratch?
No. They do chew on wires, though.
Uh-oh. We've got to watch that. Yeah. But they're adorable. You also had a pot-bellied pig out there.
Right. Her name's Piglet, and she's our little farm pig. She'll greet you at the gate looking for food and follow you around, make sure you're doing everything that you need to do. So she's quite the funny pig. So.
Now, those of us that work in regular jobs talk about bringing home the bacon, but you really do that. I understand you have a second farm out in Hamul that's, what, about 3/4 of an acre?
Yeah, about an acre that we use. We also raise organic free-range chickens and free-range pork there. Mm-hmm. We do all the processing ourselves. When we process bacon, sausage, ham, we don't use nitrates or nitrites to preserve them. So it's do our own smoking. Mm-hmm. So they are good, healthy meat, and a lot of people are very impressed by them.
Yeah. And then right there at your backyard in Spring Valley, you've got a barn, and you do cheese making as well as other products from the dairy goats that you raise from the milk. What else do you make?
Right. Well, we start off with the milk. Of course, it's all organic milk, so it's very healthy, which we do sell by the quart. And we process the milk into cheese, lotion, soap, ice cream. That's about all we'll use for. So
wonderful. I know my mother was raised on a farm in Texas years ago, and it's really a set of skills that have been lost largely in today's generation of kids growing up. But in her day, she said they raised absolutely everything they needed. They only had to go to town to buy coffee and sugar. Are we kind of seeing a reversal back to that trend, a little bit of interest in the new generation wanting to learn how to live off the land again, Don?
Yeah, I would hope to see that. We've come to a point where everything is so fast food and organized that's in a lot of ways unhealthy ways. So my focus has been providing healthy food and teaching people how to raise that themselves. And
yeah, speaking of the teaching, you do all kinds of classes out there at Valley View Urban Farm. Tell us some of the things people can learn if they sign up for the classes.
Sure. Our most popular one is cheese making. We'll learn to milk the goats right before we make the cheese. And within 2 hours, you'll come and make 3 different kinds of cheeses. And you can take home a product and samples and learn how to do that and do it yourself.
That sounds delicious. You also teach classes in canning. You know, you can't eat all those vegetables all in one fell swoop in the season, so you can save some for the winter months.
Sure.
Fermenting. Tell us about that.
Fermenting class is very interesting. You'll learn how to make sauerkraut, which is one of the healthiest probiotic foods that you can eat when it's made by yourself.
Yeah.
It's a lot more healthy because there are no other additives that people put in. So.
Bread making, where do you get the grain?
We buy organic whole wheat. We grind it ourselves. That's also in a class, learn how to make bread. Mm-hmm. Sourdough bread is our specialty, which is, in these days, gluten-free because the fermentation eats up the gluten in the sourdough bread. So yeah. It's very good for people that are gluten intolerant.
Very nice. And then you teach people how to raise chickens and goats and pigs and all of these other animals we've been talking about also, I presume?
Correct, yeah. All the intricacies that goes into taking care of these animals and keeping them healthy and productive for their lives and giving them a great life.
Also soap making and lotion making.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
We do specialized different types of lotion, which are all made from goat milk, mm-hmm. as well as the soaps.
Very good. I understand you also have some construction classes geared toward folks that may be doing a little bit of farming and want to learn how to make things. Tell us about that.
Sure. My background has been in construction for a long time as well as culinary, but I was very interested in alternative building practices. So we have classes in straw bale building and cordwood building, and I've also built a lot of log homes.
Wow.
So that's not too many around here.
Fabulous. And people can also find you teaching in some of our county libraries.
Right. The county libraries have contracted with me to come and teach different classes.
Very cool.
The Crest Library, the Ramona Library.
Yeah. So you can check the San Diego County Library schedule to get the latest classes coming up, listeners.
Correct.
Now, we've saved the best for last. I'm sure a lot of you are wondering, how on earth do you do all this stuff in such a small space? Again, this half-acre farm in Spring Valley and a one-acre one out in Jamul. You can learn more at valleyviewurbanfarm.com, but also very soon, Don is going to be hosting a segment coming up for us on the East County Magazine radio show called Backyard Homesteading.
Correct. Looking forward to sharing my knowledge and wisdom about different things that I've learned and being able to pass it on to you and encourage you to do the same.
Well, very good. Don, I want to thank you for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ. And we're going to end, listeners, by playing the intro to our upcoming backyard homesteading segment that Don Axe is going to be generously hosting for us. So listen up.
Hi, this is Don Axe at Valley View Urban Farm, your host of the Backyard Homestead, your how-to source for urban farming, homesteading, even in a small space, and getting back to our agricultural roots.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Effective immediately, the U.S. Forest Service has authorized its next-generation firefighting air tankers to operate at Brownfield and Otay Mesa near the border during times of elevated wildfire risk. Supervisor Diane Jacob calls the announcement a step forward but says it doesn't go far enough. She adds, Ramona Air Attack Base in the heart of wildfire country still makes the most sense. She notes the high risk of wildfire in our mountain areas, site of the devastating 2003 Cedar Fire and the 2007 firestorms. The decision will make it faster to reach communities scorched by the border fire, such as Potrero, Campo, and Lake Morena. However, response times from Brownfield to mountain areas such as Ramona, Cuyamaca, and Julian will still be longer than if the tankers were based in Ramona. The change comes after Supervisor Jacob and other local officials repeatedly called on the Forest Service to allow its air tankers to take off and land at the Ramona Air Base. Those pleas were ignored. During the border fire in late June, Jacob sharply criticized the Forest Service for flying in tankers from San Bernardino to battle the blaze, contending that the long distance was too far when every second counted to stop a wildfire. The border fire killed two Potrero residents and destroyed five homes, as well as 11 outbuildings, charring 7,000 acres. The Forest Service has said that Ramona's airstrip is too short, but CAL FIRE is already landing similar large tanker planes there. Jeff Power, regional aviation officer with the Forest Service, says the Brownfield option is the best alternative to reduce risk to flight crews and the community. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment.
Today I'm interviewing Antonio F. Viana, author and educator. My guest has written 20 books and 6 screenplays since 2003. He's also created 3 popular workshops, Re-Careering at Any Age, How to Write a Book and Get Published, and How to Write a Screenplay. Welcome, Antonio. It's a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks for inviting me.
You have written 18 novels and 2 nonfiction books in a period of 10 years, and yet you also work as instructor and area chair of business at the University of Phoenix here in San Diego. How do you find the time and the motivation to write so much and on such a variety of themes?
To me, it's all about commitments and priorities. I mean, essentially, I do what I value in my life and where I want to spend my time. Uh-huh. This means that I don't do a lot of things, but I rather do a few things that I try to do very well, like being an expert. And my life is a 24/7 life because I can write anytime during the day or evening or anytime during the week. I can control what I do, and I really, really like that. So I do what I do because I want to become good at it and not become a generalist.
So you have to cut back on leisure activities.
I come back on a lot of leisure activities and a lot of sleep because there's only 24 hours in this day to be able to do what I want to do.
So in a typical day, how many hours do you write?
I'll schedule my hours for the whole week, probably on a Sunday. So yesterday I looked at my calendar and asked myself, what are my projects for this whole week? Mm-hmm. And I've got essentially 2 projects going on in the area of writing. And I'll look at probably 2 or 3 hours each day committed to some form of writing or editing or researching in the projects that I'm working on.
I'm very organized. You've been called a prime example of someone who's re-careered himself. I mean, I know that in your former life, you were an Air Force officer and human resources executive. So how did you transition from that to author?
I was working in Northern California, specifically San Francisco, with a professional medical group, and I was the chief HR executive. Mm-hmm. But I felt at a point in time that I needed to switch. I had the what I call the itch to switch. And I think everybody develops the itch sometime in their career,
right,
whether it's at 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, or whatever. But I developed the itch. But I really didn't know what I wanted to do if I had left, changed the human resources executive role. So like any good business person, I did an inventory of who I was and what I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And so I analyzed my skills and my strengths and my weaknesses and my passions and all the things that go into sort of a self-evaluation. Mm-hmm. And I figured that I could do a couple of things very well outside of corporate life. And there was one thing that I was petrified of doing that I thought it could become a developmental opportunity for me. So I gave myself the title of ACE. ACE.
Okay.
A stands for author, C stands for career coach, and E stands for educator. I could be a career coach and educator pretty easily, but I really was petrified of writing. So writing became my developmental opportunity that I decided to commit to. And today, 10 years later, I'm really spending most of my time doing the writing. So it was a business plan that I created, and I considered myself to be the business. And I needed to figure out how I could make money as me, as that person who runs the business.
So if we could say that some writers are born and some are made, you made yourself.
I made myself. I was not an avid writer or an avid reader in the day. In fact, even today, I don't do a lot of reading of full books. I do reading for purposes of research and for looking at how writers are able to tell a compelling story or develop compelling characters.
Craft. Well, I know you've written novels in a variety of genres, books on espionage, murder, love stories, ghost stories, and even a vampire trilogy. Which book did you enjoy the most writing and why? And is it difficult to cross types of books?
Yeah, I'm always asked this question about what my favorite book is. And so I will answer that in a sort of circular way. I have 2 favorite books. One is my first book. It's called The Tale from a Ghost Dance. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what I was doing when I was writing this book. I was experimenting with my writing style. Mm-hmm. I was experimenting with creating stories and characters. And it's probably, although the book is still in print, it is the worst crafted book of all time.
If you do say so yourself.
If I do say so myself, but I love it because I look at the books that I'm writing now and I can see the growth that I have been able to accomplish in my writing career. So my second favorite book will always be my last book, because it shows what I'm really capable of doing. And that last book is called Scarlet Rose, and it just came out in January of this year.
I know that you've published independently, like so many authors are choosing to do in this new age. What made you go that route, and how do you market yourself?
I'm a control freak. I want to control what I do, and I want to own what I do. And the way to do that for me is look at independent publishing. Mm-hmm. So I'm with a print-on-demand publisher called Author Solutions. Essentially, I give them my manuscript, and I tell them what to do, how to put it into a book format. I then pay them services for marketing, for editing, for all kinds of things that I would have to pay someone else to do if I was even with a traditional publisher. So the notion of independent publishing allows me to control what I want to do and market it in a way that I think is appropriate. And also, because I now do screenplays, because I own the novel, I can adapt that novel to a screenplay without asking permission from anyone.
Right. And do you have any screenplays that are being optioned? Or
I have six screenplays now being looked at in Hollywood. Five of them are adapted from my novels. The sixth one, which is called Desperate, that just came out probably a month ago, is an original screenplay. And the idea is to leverage the novel and the screenplay towards Hollywood.
One last question, Antonio. What are you writing now, and when will it be available?
I'm completing a novel called Crush. It's a suspense drama thriller novel. It's about telemarketing scams and how this person overcomes a telemarketing scam. It probably will come out in January of next year.
Okay, look forward to it. Our time is up, but thanks again for joining us. For more information on Antonio F. Viana, please visit his website at www.vianabooks4u.com, and that's the number 4 and the letter U. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you've been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is Liz Albert with an Aztecs football report. The San Diego State football team swept the preseason awards and captured all 29 first-place votes en route to being picked to win the West Division of the Mountain West in the 2016 preseason poll, the league announced last Tuesday in Las Vegas. The Aztecs became just the second unanimous preseason pick in Mountain West history. As of last Tuesday morning, SDSU was the only team in the FBS to receive all of the possible first-place votes in a divisional or league poll. The preseason poll and all-conference team are voted on by media representatives who cover the conference. Senior Danelle Pumphrey was named the Preseason Offensive Player of the Year, while senior DeMonte Casey was chosen as the Defensive Player of the Year and junior Rashad Penny as the Special Teams Player of the Year. The three players captured all three postseason awards in 2015. Last year, Pumphrey rushed for 1,653 yards and 17 touchdowns on 309 attempts, while leading the team with 28 catches for 416 yards and 3 touchdowns, en route to being named a Sports Illustrated Honorable Mention All-American, a Mountain West Offensive Player of the Year, and an All-Mountain West first-team selection for a second straight season. He was one of just four players in all of FBS to lead his team in rushing yards and receptions. A cornerback, Casey had 8 interceptions in 2015, which tied for the second most in the nation, the most in the Aztecs Division I era and in Mountain West history. He also added 75 tackles with a team-high 58 solo stops, 7 pass breakups, 5.5 tackles for loss, and 2 forced fumbles, eventually being named the second-team USA Today All-American, an honorable mention Sports Illustrated All-American, the Mountain West Defensive Player of the Year, and the first-team All-Mountain West pick. Penny, meanwhile, returned 24 kicks for 804 yards and 3 touchdowns last season. He was one of 5 players last year in FBS play to have at least 3 kick return touchdowns, making second in the nation in kick return average and being named the Mountain West Special Teams Player of the Year. He also added 368 rushing yards and 4 scores on 61 attempts and 8 catches for 120 yards and another score. Pumphrey, Casey, and Penny were joined on the preseason All-Mountain West team by seniors Alex Barrett, Calvin Munson, and Nico Saragusa. The six players on the preseason all-conference team were the most in the league, and SDSU's second-highest total in league history, one behind the 1999 squad's seven Sartans. Barrett came up with 62 tackles a year ago, with 13 tackles for loss, 5.5 sacks, 2 interceptions, 1 for a touchdown, and 7 quarterback hurries. Barrett backed a defense that finished among the top 10 in FBS in each of the 4 main categories, including 5th in total, 7th in scoring and rushing, and 10th in passing. Barrett was also an All-Mountain West first-team pick. Munson led SDSU in multiple categories in 2015, including tackles, tackles for loss, sacks, and fumble recoveries, while adding 2 interceptions, both returned for a touchdown, 2 forced fumbles, and 7 quarterback hurries. Munson was also a Phil Steele Magazine third-time All-American and an All-Mountain West first-team pick. Siragusa anchored an offensive line that helped the Aztecs rush for a school record 3,226 yards and have a pair of 1,000-yard rushers for the first time in program history. He was also a first-team All-Mountain West selection by the Leeds media and coaches last year. SDSU is coming off an 11-3 season where it tied the school record for the most wins in a single year, finished with a 10-game winning streak, won the Mountain West title, and beat Cincinnati 42-7 in the Hawaii Bowl. It is the 7th straight year that San Diego State has been picked to win the league, although this is the 4th year of the 2 divisions in the Mountain West. The Aztecs, who averaged a predicted finish of 6.5 from 2005 to 2012, have been picked to win the West Division each of the last 2 years and were predicted 2nd in both 2013 and 2014. SDSU has won 2 of the past 4 Mountain West regular season titles. San Diego State has ended up at or better than its predicted finish in 7 straight seasons and 10 times over the past 11 years. The Aztecs garnered 174 points, including all 20 first-place votes. The Aztecs kick off the 2016 season at Qualcomm Stadium against New Hampshire on September 3rd at 5:30 p.m.
In the good old summertime, in the good old summertime, strolling through the shady lane with your baby mine. You hold her hand and she holds yours, and that's a very good sign that she's your tootsie wootsie in the good old summertime.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. As temperatures climb, it's important to stay cool. Seniors and those without air conditioning are particularly vulnerable to heat-related illness. The county has provided a list of cool zones where you can beat the heat, including places in East County, such as libraries and senior centers. All are free and open to the public during designated hours. You can find a list of school zones in your area at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.